Sign Language with Bruce Williams.
Hi, and welcome to episode 158 of Sign Language, which you probably thought was never going to happen. Apologies for the extended delay, and you're only getting this episode because Rob Bettler reached out, kicked my butt, and told me I was being slack. So, a couple of things. One, yes, I have been partially distracted from this podcast because working a lot on Dave's album, which is very close to finished in terms of tracking. 5 of the 11 songs are actually mixed and in the bag. The other 6 require backing vocals. Actually, no, make that 6 are done and 5 require backing vocals, which hopefully will be recorded in the next week or two. So, yeah, that's kind of been my main focus of late. And I've had a little bit of a resurgent interest in photography of late. Not that I've been doing a lot, but anyway. I've also been considering the idea, and I'd had this thought and then lost the thought, and then Rob planted the thought, which reminded me of the idea, of finding somebody who has an equal interest in audio as I do, and preferably somebody who works in the industry in some capacity, and ideally not someone who does radio production. It'd be great to find a co-host who was in some other area of pro audio. I did have a thought for somebody who I thought would make a great co-host, and I reached out to him, and yeah, he was kind of lukewarm. So I don't think that's going to happen, but I'm going to keep looking. I'm going to keep looking. For those of you who are into photography and who've listened to Shutters Inc., which is my photography podcast, you would know the kind of dynamic that Glenn and I have, and Shelton and I had before that. I just feel it makes a far more compelling podcast to hear two people, you know, bouncing off each other than one guy sitting at a microphone and crapping on for half an hour. So, yeah, I will continue the search. If any of you out there feel that you are qualified, please drop me a line. More than happy to discuss with anyone who's interested in filling that role. In the meantime, I'll keep my ear to the ground as well. But I did come up with something that I thought will add to this podcast as a potentially recurring theme. And it is the concept of, I had this great idea, but I'd never got someone to voice something through the week so that I could make a little intro for it. I was going to call it the dissection. And the idea is that I am going to grab a commercial that I've made at some point in the past, and the one I've chosen this week I made back in 2015, so it's over a year old now, and I feel that I need to make sure that anything I use is significantly old enough so that it won't ruffle any feathers that I use it as a guinea pig on the podcast. So basically it's a commercial that I made last year, something with a bit of work to it that's a little bit more than just a voiceover and a music track. And what I'll do is I'll play you the full mix and then I will break it down piece by piece, and there will be screenshots along with these show notes which will show all of the settings that I had happening, both for the plugins, for the track automation. Obviously, this stuff will have all been done in Steinberg Nuendo, which is the platform we use at work. And you'll get to hear all of the elements that make up the track piece by piece, both without their effects and then with their effects and their automation added, and till we get right back to a finished mix at the end. So I'm hoping, it really is just a hope at this point, and I look for some feedback from you guys, whoever is still listening to this podcast, to let me know if you find that beneficial. You know, the idea of hearing, you know, parts in their raw form, untreated, and hearing what processing I added, what automation I added, what mental things I was thinking as I put that spot together, you know, and the way I, you know, process the two bus at the end of it all. I'd be keen to know if that kind of approach is useful to you, and whether, you know, you can get something from hearing my workflow, you know, if that helps you in any way, whether you're, you know, just looking to build an intro for your podcast, or whether you're, you know, creating an audio drama and you're looking for ways to layer sounds and process sounds and things like that. So, yeah, so I thought, well, you know, I've got this, you know, stupidly large back catalogue of content that I can go back to for inspiration for these segments that I'll refer to as the dissection. Yeah, if it proves to be useful to you, then I will continue to do it. If I hear nothing, then I'll assume that it's a waste of time and don't bother. As you can imagine, Rob did reach out to me after the last episode with some more stuff to read. So I will read his stuff and then we'll get on to the dissection for this episode. Most likely you've been as busy as due to the BBB summer duties we all have, beach, beer, and boob watching, hopefully. So I do not blame you for temporarily dropping the ball on sign language, simply because that is the nature of the Lazarus podcast. It never dies. To be honest, Lazarus sounds better than the weed or cockroach podcast I originally considered for its nickname. This week we have a follow-up to Delusional Audio Splurge. I mean, the audiophile market and how, despite its pitfalls and failures, companies keep trying to bring audiophile-grade products to the mass market. As you remember, some kamikaze companies like Pono tried to bring a Toblerone-looking iPhone abomination, only to spectacularly fail. The Pono was a product that was not only 10 years late, but also as ugly as a triangle chocolate sin, and to top it off, it had to compete against the giant smartphone market that can squash any audiophile dedicated product anytime it wants. Furthermore, the Pono failure was more due to its delusional raison d'etre, bringing audiophile grade audio to a market where most smartphone users use earbuds and don't care. Does the general consumer actually require audiophile grade audio? No. Most consumers just stick to the stock earbuds, so that little elephant in the room should have given Neil Young a heads up, but you know Alzheimer's, it's a hell of a drug. I mean, Neil Young should have noticed that in the startup world, what fails is a solution looking for a problem. The Pono was a solution looking for a problem most consumers do not have. In short, products like the Pono are doomed to fail because they just do one thing, and consumers want a jack of all trades. You know, like a smartphone. Oh, guess what? Another challenger enters the Pono fray. This time, it's a smartphone by ZTE.
Or ZTE for the Americans.
Called the Axon 7, with more than decent specs and a price tag of only $400. Fortunately, ZTE had the decency of also making the Axon in black. So what is ZTE's claim to fame? What would make the Axon 7 fail less than the Pono? Well, for starters, it has the speakers in the front, which is something so many phones get amazingly wrong. And the phone itself is supposed to come with a built-in amplifier and Dolby Atmos. See, here's where I tuned out. This was the first buzzword red flag on behalf of ZTE. Dolby Atmos is supposed to be 128 audio tracks at 7.1, and then ZTE uses this blatantly false claim for marketing purposes. It's just blatant buzzwords because current smartphones are always subsets of movie theaters. Even if the AKM4490 chipset is an independent amplifier meant to enhance hi-fi playback, a smartphone with earbuds cannot be a 7.1 movie theater. The second set of blatant buzzwords and red flag by ZTE was that the phone records so well that it can capture audio from more than 8 meters away, quote unquote, and replace a conference room speaker, quote unquote. See where this is going? Replacing a conference room speaker is not something most users concern themselves with. It's another solution looking for a problem most people do not have. Oh, Bruce. After the second red flag, ZTE's Axon started to smell like the Pono. It really baffles the mind why companies succumb to consuming their own stash. And a company like ZTE should have noticed they were creating their own glorified Pono called the Axon 7. The amount of engineering and resources that goes into products like these is not small. It looks more like groupthink, where anybody who may have thought the Axon was a bad idea either stayed silent or just went along with their delusion.
I find it difficult to believe that at least one of the many ZTE very smart engineers did not see the flaws with the Axon promise. I've met a fair share of engineers, and as a rule, they tend to be kind of smart, but maybe the ZTE variety of engineers just followed orders or drank the Kool-Aid or both. As a consumer in the market for a smartphone upgrade, I see no compelling reasons to invest my money in a product like the Axon 7. If more people end up reaching the same conclusion, it appears that, just like the Pono, ZTE's Axon 7 is doomed to fail because it's another solution looking for a problem most consumers do not have. Let's see how many people actually buy Axon Ponos. I won't. How about you, Bruce? Are you in the market for a glorified Pono?
Well, I'm just going to jump in and respond to that. No, I'm not. I bought myself an Oppo F1F earlier this year, which in Australian dollars I was able to buy outright for $289, I think it was. I know it was, you know, under $300. Now, sure, it's no flagship phone. It's not even a 1920 by 1080 screen. It's a little bit less than that. But I was okay with that because this thing came with 3 gigs of RAM, an octa-core processor, and a 3,000 milliamp hour battery? No, I think it's a bit less. I think it's about a 2,800 milliamp hour battery. And basically what I was doing, when I was looking for that phone, I was looking at the combination of screen resolution and battery. And I looked at the screen res and I looked at the size of the battery and I went, this thing's going to run for days. And that was what I bought it for, was knowing that it would have the battery power to get me through a day with even heavy abuse, you know. And it does. It's a great phone. I absolutely love it. The audio chip in it, the DAC, is a little bit noisy. But part of that noise that I hear might be due to the Sina Bluetooth unit, which sticks to the side of my motorcycle helmet. When I listen with my earbuds just plugged into the headphone jack of the phone, it's much quieter than it is when I'm listening via Bluetooth on the bike. So, yeah, there's some noise there, but it's not all the fault of the phone. And to come back to your argument about the Axon 7, Rob, I think what would be interesting would be to hear what the quality of that DAC is like. Because I can ignore all the other crap, all the other marketing guff. I can ignore all of that. I can turn off most of those, you know, 7.1 sound output options and just go for a stereo output. If it's got a nice quiet DAC on it, hey, great. And at that price point, $400 for a flagship phone, if it does everything else you want it to do, where's the harm? I mean, I'm with you. I absolutely think it's abhorrent that they go citing Dolby Atmos for, you know, output from a smartphone, because I think that's a load of crap just like you did. But anyway, you know, each to their own. I think at the end of the day, it's down to the consumer to go into a store, have a listen to the phone, you know, with your earbuds, because pretty much, you know, every phone shop will let you at least do that. They'll at least let you plug in your own earbuds and have a listen to the sound quality before you commit to the phone. I say go in there, have a listen to it. If it works for you, if it makes a phone call, if it shows your photos, if it does everything else it needs to do, ignore all the guff and just go, hey, that's a great phone for $400. Or if it doesn't work for you, nah, I'd rather spend $700 on a Galaxy S7 or what, you know, S5 or Note 7 or whatever. You know, each to their own. Anyway, so that's that for Rob's email. Thank you, Rob. Appreciate it. And yeah, let's get on to the dissection. Okay, so this is a spot that I made, like I said, 2015. Here's the full final mix.
Action Paintball presents
Total War 1.
March 22.
One giant 53-acre battlefield.
Over 400 players in two massive armies.
With three incredible missions.
Huge pyrotechnics, explosions, and tons of smoke
to add to the insanity of battle.
Discounted packages from $89.
Including all gear and 1,000 paintballs.
Tons of huge prizes and medals to be won.
March 22 will be one epic day of paintball.
Register now at actionpaintball.com.
Okay, so let's be clear. That's not an award-winning piece of audio. Not by any stretch of the imagination. This was just the first project that I found when I went looking that had more than half a dozen tracks of audio. It's got some automation. It's got some plugins. There's a little bit going on. And I thought that'll do as a first dissection. So if you look at the first screenshot in the show notes, you'll see that, yes, I'm working with dual monitors at work, and they're, you know, standard 4:3 aspect ratio. And so what you've got is the track lay on the left-hand side, and on the right-hand side, you've got the mixer, the automation panel, and my trusty little Antres VU meter plugin, which I've mentioned many times on this podcast. If you have a look on the left-hand side at the track lay, you can see that I always, you wouldn't know that I always do it, but I have a template set up where I have a couple of tracks for music, which are color-coded blue. I then have, by default, I have two voice tracks, which are color-coded sort of orange. In this project, I've added a third one because I wanted more tracks for the voice. And I usually just have two tracks for effects. So my basic track template is six tracks. Obviously, for this, I've needed to add some more things because I needed more stuff going on. The four effects tracks all go, if you have a look in the mixer panel on the right-hand side, you can see that there is a bus called FX Submix. So those four green effects tracks are all routed out into the input of the effects submix. I do that simply because it allows me to ride the effects volume as a whole unit if I need to. Most of the time, I never touch the fader for the effects submix, but it's there if I need it. It's more like an insurance policy. The voices, if you have a look at the top of the mixer panel, you can see they all route out to a bus called the VO submix, which you can also see a fader for. And then the music, it just routes out to the main outputs, the two bus. Okay, and you can't see all three of the effects buses that I've got down the right-hand end of the mixer. You can see reverb and DL short, but there's another one, DL long. So I have a short delay and a long delay just set up as a basic, you know, template for all the commercials that I make. A lot of the time I don't use them. Some of the times I use them with their default settings, and other times I'll go in and tweak those settings according to what I need, but they're just there to save me having to set them up every time if I need them. Okay, so that's the basic layout. You can't see any automation at the moment because the automation lanes are hidden. We'll get to that as we work our way through it. But next up, what I've done is I've muted the sound effects, muted the music, and just play what you're about to hear will just be the voices, but it will be without any automation, without any EQ, without any of the effects plugins running. It would simply be the checkerboarded audio that you can see on those three orange tracks. Here we go.
Action Paintball presents Total War 1, Hell's Split, March 22, one giant 53-acre battlefield, over 400 players in two massive armies, with three incredible missions, huge pyrotechnics, explosions and tons of smoke to add to the insanity of battle, discounted packages from $89, including all gear and 1,000 paintballs, tons of huge prizes and medals to be won. March 22 will be one epic day of paintball. Register now at actionpaintball.com.
Okay, so that's the voice track by itself. Now, if you look at the second screen capture, you'll see the effects that I had on track number one, the actual track that's called Alex Dalrymple, who was the voice for this particular spot. And you'll see that in the top, on the right-hand screen, in the top left-hand side of it, you've got the audio channel settings. Basically, that's an overview of everything going on just the Alex Dalrymple track. You can see there's a plugin for the flanger, which I've got open immediately below that. And then you can see that there are some sends, and I've got a send going to the reverb. And although there's a send for the delay short and the delay long, there's no level going to those. The level is indicated by the little blue line. You can see that in the reverb section. Ignore the studio sends. That's simply for headphone monitoring in our voice booth. The other window that's open below that is the Waves Renaissance Reverb. And that's the reverb that I had running, which I think a couple of the voice tracks got sent to from memory. We'll find out as we work our way through it. Okay, if you go to the next screenshot, what you're seeing is the voice processing for the second voice track. And you can see that in the effects slots, I've got Da Tube, which is a default Steinberg, or when I say default, it's a built-in Steinberg plugin, which does saturation. And I've got that open down below the channel settings window. Over in the sends, you can see that there's no reverb send happening, but there is a send happening going to the short delay, and I've got the short delay window open immediately below it as well. You can see all the settings for that, and you can see some pretty radical EQ happening in the EQ section of the channel settings window, where I've rolled off a lot of the bottom end, I've put a fairly sizable peak right in the middle of the mid-range. Wow, 16 dB boost at 817 hertz, that's ugly, but that's what we do, that's the kind of crazy stuff we do. Yeah. Anyway, so moving right along to the next screen capture, this is the third voice track, and there's not a lot happening here. You can see that there is a stereo delay set up in the effects slot, or in the first effects slot. And again, the parameters for that are open immediately below the channel settings window. And in the sends, there is just a send going to a pitch changer. And that was another effects bus that I had set up. I'd forgotten about that one. Again, in that right-hand view of the screenshot, it's actually hidden. It didn't fit on the mixer in the view. I would have had to have scrolled the mixer across to the right-hand side in order to see it. But basically, I had a pitch changer there, which was doing some, you know, deepening of that voice track, but only for the first little voice clip that appears early on in the spot. So having looked at all of that, we'll move on to the next screenshot. And this is showing you all of the different automation lanes that were active for simply the first voice track. And you can see that there is some modification to the EQ on that voice track for just the final paragraph of the voice. And you can see I've actually dialed that in from a control surface. You can tell by the kind of random series of black dots. It doesn't just jump from one black dot to another black dot, which would indicate hand-drawn automation with a mouse. This was actually done with a control surface. And I, to be honest, I can't even remember what I was doing with the EQ. It looks like I was probably lifting the frequency and reducing the gain. So obviously I was thinning out that voice track in that last paragraph. Then there's a whole bunch of channels that aren't being automated. They're just set to static values. Right down the bottom there is a send one, which is obviously going to the reverb, and I've taken that out for the final paragraph of the voice. And I quite often do this in my mixes simply because we're under fairly tight controls with regards how long a spot runs. If we're asked to build a commercial that runs 30 seconds, it's supposed to be finished by 30 seconds, which I think is ridiculous. I usually mix all my tracks off to 31 seconds, and I'll allow a little bit of a reverb tail to stick out beyond the 30 second mark, but I do make sure everything's out by 31 seconds. In radio, what we do is we aim to have what's called a pulse at the end of every commercial. And that pulse, it used to be an electronic tone. These days it's all digital. It's just a marker in the file that says, this is the point at which the system should fire the next event. And I aim to be able to put my pulse at pretty much bang on 30 seconds. So I aim to have all of the voice stuff finished at 30 seconds. And if there's a little bit of a reverb tail, I'm okay with that, because if the next event fires, it just fires over the top of the reverb tail. So you can see here that I've used automation to reduce the send going to the reverb for that last paragraph of voice. The next automation lane below that is the flanger. So what we've got there is the flanger bypass. And over the course of the 30-second commercial, that flanger is either active or it's in bypass mode, depending on where the that automation graph for that channel is. I think it starts off in bypass mode, and when the automation goes to the top of the lane, that's when it's active, and then it cuts off, and then it cuts back in, and then it cuts off again. Okay, and then again, there's some EQ tweaking happening on EQ band 2, also in that last paragraph. All right, so let's move on now to the processing or the automation for track 3, because there was no automation for the second voice track. So in the third voice track, on the left-hand side of the screen, you can see that there was the send just during that first event on the track that was sending to the pitch changer. But after that, I reduced that send to nil. So for the second and third voice events that appear on that track, they were not going to the pitch send the send to the pitch plugin. Okay. If we move on to the next screenshot, what you're seeing is the project playing, and this is the voice bus processing. Now, I've spoken at length about Stav's idea of putting a peak limiter first and then a compressor to follow. I remember when I first read it, it really hit me from out of the blue, and I was like, what? No, that's all wrong. But once you actually put it into practice, you realize it works really well. So the idea is that you have a peak limiter first, and you set that so it's nibbling, you know, maybe 6 dB of the peaks off the top of the voice. And what that does is just let the compressor which follows it not have to work so hard to bring all of your voice parts into line. So as you can see, I've got a threshold of minus 18.9 dB on the peak limiter, an output of minus 10. So that means that what's coming out of that peak limiter is roughly at minus 10 dB. And then I've gone into the compressor with a threshold of minus 15, which means that it's really only hitting the top 5 dB of whatever's coming through, with a 2.49, 2.5 dB to 1 ratio. So it's fairly, you know, light in terms of compression on the voice track. I do that because I don't want to crush the voice, because it's going to get compressed again at the master bus. So that's my approach. So that's the voice processing of all three voice tracks, because they're all going into that VO submix, and that peak limiter and compressor are what are on the VO submix track. So all three voices, in the sense of the three tracks in the track lay, are all going through that processing. Okay, so now that we've looked at those screenshots, we will move on to having a listen to the next pass, which is just the voice tracks, but with all of that automation and effects active. Here we go.
Action Paintball presents
Total War 1
Hell's Split. March 22.
One giant 53-acre battlefield.
Over 400 players in two massive armies.
With three incredible missions.
Huge pyrotechnics, explosions, and tons of smoke.
To add to the insanity of battle.
Discounted packages from $89.
Including all gear and 1,000 paintballs.
Tons of huge prizes and medals to be won.
March 22 will be one epic day of paintball.
Register now at actionpaintball.com.
So if we move on to the next screenshot, what we've got is all of the parameters for all of the effects that are running. So you can see out in the top, I've got the Waves IR reverb, which is an impulse reverb, which is a type of convolution reverb, if you like. Then I've got the two delays, the short delay and the long delay, which I don't think I used the long delay in this particular project. And then there's the mono delay and the pitch shifter, which were both running on that fourth effects bus. The mono delay was simply to create a bit of a delay before the pitch shifted vocal appeared, you know, mixed in with whatever was coming from the voice track itself. I hope that makes sense. All right, so that's all of the effects that were in play, if you like. Next up is the sound effects track. So I'll play you this. If you have a look at that last screenshot, you can see what effects I've got in. Well, they're not really named, but that effects 3, which runs all the way through. Well, I'll play it for you first, and then I'll explain what's there. Here we go. Okay, so that was all of the items that, you know, appear on tracks FX1, FX2, FX3, and FX4. FX3, which runs all the way through, as you might have gathered, is the sound of the outdoors, the bush, the birds in the trees and the wind through the foliage and all that sort of stuff. What's on FX4 is all of the two-way chatter. I grabbed some sound effects from the Sound Ideas Library, looking at the clips there, and it was just, you know, random emergency services talkback stuff. But I figured, you know, if you buried it low in the mix, it was enough to be audible in the mix, but not high enough that you could actually work out what was being said, and therefore it could be, you know, construed as being combat tactics being communicated over the comms link, that sort of thing. And then effects 1 and effects 2 are all mostly just random paintball gunshots, with the exception of a few tracks there or a few clips right in the middle of the spot, which were some digital noise to go along with. I can't even remember what the dialogue was saying at that point in time, but it was something about explosions and something. so that's the track lay for the sound effects. And if we jump to the next screenshot, you'll see all of the automation that was taking place across those four tracks. Track 3 had no automation because that was just a static sound effects track of the outdoors of the bush. You can see that with the effects 4 track, the two-way chatter, I've manually drawn in some pan envelopes so that the two-way chatter would move off center to left, right, back and forth, to just kind of give the impression of, you know, people moving around in the bush as they're playing paintball. And then all of the paintball, you know, gun effect, you can see I've used a waveform shape on the pan envelope. Simply because I didn't want to go hand drawing all of the pan envelopes, so I used the sine wave tool. Like, there's an envelope drawing tool that allows you to draw sine waves in Nuendo, and so I used that to pan those, you know, gunshot sound effects all over the place, left, right, middle, quite randomly. I wasn't really giving a lot of consideration to where each one was going. Just as long as they were all over the place. And then there's a little bit of volume automation in there as well. So that's all of the sound effects. So finally, we will have a listen to just the music track by itself. Here we go. Okay, so that's the music by itself, and if you have a look at the next screenshot, you can see that I've actually used two different tracks in the track lay. Well, it's the same piece of music, but I've just cut different pieces of the music because I wanted certain things to occur at certain points in the voice track. I was going for, you know, little bits of impact here and there, and obviously I've cut it so that we end up with the end of the piece of music finishing, you know, just before the 30-second mark of the commercial, because this music piece was probably a 2.5-3 minute production music track. Obviously, I only need 30 seconds, but I don't want the music to just fade out. I want to get the whole resolve at the end of the piece of music. And the automation that you can see there is the volume automation for both of those tracks. All right, so that's pretty much it. The next screenshot shows us Isotope Trash, which I had inserted in the first effects slot on the master bus, and I've just given it a little bit of drive, like an overdrive type effect. For things like this, you know, kind of a war vibe, I think a little bit of a drive, bit of saturation goes a long way just to adding to the mood and the texture of the mix. But an effect like this, I will actually have in bypass while I'm building the mix. So all of the automation that you've seen me doing across all of those tracks in the mix was all done before this Isotope Trash plugin was added to the signal path. Although, well, it was in the signal path, but it was in bypass. So that would have been added, you know, it would taken out of bypass after I'd got my whole mix sounding the way I wanted it to sound. And I can then just dial in as much, you know, drive saturation with trash as I want. And then if we go to the next screenshot, you'll see the final two plugins in my two bus chain, which is another instance of Waves R-Comp, the Renaissance compressor, which again is not working excessively hard. It's just over a 5-to-1 ratio, fairly fast attack, fairly slow release. And then the Waves L316 peak limiter with a bit of a smiley face EQ added to it just to kind of color everything up and give it some zap and some sizzle right there at the end. And as I have mentioned in the past, you can see from that Waves L316 peak limiter that the output ceiling is set to -1. So basically that says, regardless of what happens, not one single sample is going to get above -1 dB full scale. And how hard everything gets driven into that peak limiter is dictated by the threshold setting, and how far I drive that threshold setting is all based on my Antres modern meter down the bottom there, which is my VU meter plugin. And I basically just drive the input, or that threshold value for the peak limiter, until my VU meter is just sitting nicely at zero. So that's my approach to building a commercial and then mixing and mastering all in the box in one pass.
Action Paintball presents Total War 1. March 22. One giant 53-acre battlefield. Over 400 players in two massive armies with three incredible missions. Huge pyrotechnics, explosions and tons of smoke to add to the insanity of battle. Discounted packages from $89, including all gear and 1,000 paintballs. Tons of huge prizes and medals to be won. March 22 will be one epic day of paintball. Register now at actionpaintball.com.
Sorry if this has been longer than you were anticipating, and if I've gone into too much detail, please tell me. If I didn't go into enough detail, please tell me. If this has been of some value, please let me know so that I know to keep doing it. If you think it was an absolute waste of time, please let me know and I'll stop. All right, and in the meantime, the search for a co-host continues. All right, until I speak with you next, take care.
Sign language. For questions, comments and feedback, email studio@audiotou.com.